listening to Miller & Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
Hour two of Miller & Moulton on this hump day. Thanks for getting over it together with us here on the Florida Sports Network, floridasportsnetwork.com, which is where you go. If you miss any part of the show, you can download our podcast, which Felipe usually gets up right away, floridasportsnetwork.com. Also, it's where you go to sign up for our golf tournament 3 weeks from Saturday. It's filling up. Got a long ways to go, though. I want to see as many of you as possible, raise a little money for charity. I'm trying to raise a lot of money for charity. And you'll get good food, good drink, nice shirt out of the deal. You know, as we like to say, it'll be a hot steaming deal. Saturday, June 11th, West Bay in Estero. Join us.
Yeah, sign up, floridasportsnetwork.com. You can sign up as a single or as a foursome. So we would hope that you would do so as soon as possible, and we can fill this sucker up, and then you don't have to hear us babble.
Right. Right. I mean, occasionally we'll mention the sponsors just to thank them and give them some love.
Well, yeah, we'll do that, but we'd like to say the tournament sold out, and we'd like to thank the following sponsors.
Exactly. Budweiser, Twin Peaks, FloridaGolfCards.com, or FLGolfCards.com.
I think that sums it up.
By the time we get this thing sold out, I'll know the drill. Lightning and Heat, big winners last night. Orlando, a big winner. They won the draft lottery. Nobody knows who they're going to take first. Apparently, there's like four guys. I'd take the guy that the F1 guy from Sky Sports didn't recognize, who thought he was Patrick Mahomes. I'd take the Banchero kid from Duke, personally, but... In fact, maybe the Magic should let the Sky Sports guy line up the four choices and let him choose.
Just let him interview the four of them.
Right.
If you don't know what David's referencing, it was the F1 race that was on ABC.
Right. Right. They put it on a real network and everything.
And the Sky Sports man in the streets interviewer, and I happened to turn it on in the middle of it, and I couldn't stomach it. It was so bad.
So you didn't keep watching. It was not the car crash that you started rubbernecking.
No, it was so bad. Here's the thing, David. You were all into the F1.
I was.
I would love to go to an F1 race, but there is no desire for me to watch this event on television because I do not think F1 is a very good television event.
I don't either. That's why I was interested in the 30 minutes before it. Mark, it's the red carpet part of the Oscars. Once the monologue in the Oscars is over, I don't care.
Here's the thing.
With the first lap in the F1 race. Once the first turn is over, the race is over.
Here's the thing, David. On the red carpet, everybody knows who everybody is. And when they do the interviews, I can watch it and go, oh, they're interviewing so-and-so. Do you know why? Because they say the person's name and they're correct.
Right.
So as I'm watching this guy mill his way through the crowd, and he saw a guy in a Ferrari shirt and stopped him to talk about Ferraris, and the guy wanted nothing to do with him.
Correct.
He was just a fan.
Right.
He was a nobody. He was
Correct.
A rich nobody because he was back in an area where, in order to get to, you have to have some wherewithal. But that was, at that point, I'm going, this is the absolute worst thing I've ever seen. I'm going to go back outside by the pool with my daughter. This is terrible. And I turned it off. So I missed him. Not knowing who Banchero, the kid from Duke there was, not knowing who, or getting basically patted on the head, sort of, you know, pushed away by, what was it, Serena?
Yeah, Serena didn't want anything to do with him. He thought Banchero was Patrick Mahomes.
He walked past D. Wade.
Right, in Miami, too. Right.
It was so funny. He was like anti-Guillermo from Jimmy Kimmel.
Appreciate the reference.
Me too. And that's a current reference, and we probably should be a little more aware of those things from time to time.
No, I think we are. It's just that at 7 a.m., I don't know how many people watch Kimmel. you know, I mean, to be up at this hour, you usually are not watching the late night TV, but so that's why I'm glad he clarified. But that's all. So we had three big winners last night, Mark. We had the Heat, we had the Lightning, and we had the Orlando Magic, who can't win on the court, so the only thing they can do is win off it.
Yeah. And you look at these four players that are all talked about going, or the three players all talked about going 1, 2, and 3, and there's no transcendent player there. Or we wouldn't be discussing it's one of the three guys. It would be very
exactly.
clearly A.
Right. Right. I think Magic fans, of which there apparently are still 37 of them, 34 of them who live in Orange County. But, you know, if you can't name the guy they're going to draft, probably not the best year to have the number one overall pick, but who knows? We shall see. Heat by 11, Lightning 4-1. They score three power play goals. They also score three goals in the third. Panthers going to have to do something that, well, they just did last round. They won after losing game one, which they had never done before. Do you know that's seven consecutive playoff series they've lost game one? That's tough to do.
It would make sense when they haven't won a series up until last week this century.
I understand, but you would think, you know, I mean, that's over a long period of time. That's not just this group. That's also including one or two other groups. Man, it's tough. Seven straight playoff series, lose game one seven times.
Well, this will be interesting because I think Burnett has the job based on winning the first playoff series, but I don't know if it's like you beat Tampa, it's a lock. It's your job. You're going to get paid. You're probably going to get a 3-year deal. I don't know if he has secured the 3-year deal yet, David, by winning just one round. Do you?
Yes, I do. I do. Here's why. There's two marquee coaches that are out there. One's Joel Quenneville. Well, he was the Panthers coach, and they fired him in the wake of the whole Blackhawks sex abuse scandal, of which Quenneville gets some of the blame. So obviously the Panthers aren't going to hire him back. Hell, there's a debate as to whether or not anybody's going to hire him, but I think they will. Quenneville likely to be suspended for a short period of time by the league. And then the other one's Barry Trotz. Here's the problem I see with Trotz in Florida. Mark, it might be too much offensive talent for Trotz's system. There might be a revolt if you have that much offensive talent and Trotz comes in and goes, let me explain my defensive system to you. I mean, to me, it would be more severe. Remember when Scotty Bowman came into Detroit and they had all that offensive talent and he said, listen, can I just teach you how to win a 2-1, 3-2 game? Because that's what we're going to play in the playoffs. We don't have to play this style all the time, but can I just teach you how to play it so when we need to, we can?
Well, if Florida doesn't get through this round, you and I believe they will lose this round because they will lose games just like what you described. They're not going to lose this series 5-4 three more times, if you know what I mean.
I understand. I just don't know if, I mean, Trotz would probably want the job. Take a look at that much talent and go, I can win a cup with that. I wonder if Trotz would actually be a little too severe for the roster that the Panthers have. Does that make any sense or no?
It makes a ton of sense. And we're not saying Burnett's done. We're just saying I believe if he gets, if David thinks he has the job, I think it's 90 to 95% done. But I still think there's a chance if they lose this series, particularly given the fact that their power play has stunk in the postseason. That at some point has to come back on the head coach.
Well, they'll blame an assistant. But I know what you're saying. I will say this, if I'm a Panthers fan, if we could just keep extending these series, because at some point you're going to start scoring power play goals. There's just too much talent on the ice. And once you score one, you might score four. But you just have to make sure you're not down 3-0 to the Lightning before you score that power play goal.
So let's see what Burnett does in game two, if there's any line change combinations, what the power play looks like in game two. But they're going to have to make some changes because the power play has been bad. They're not getting possession. They didn't get a lot of possession in the zone, particularly in the third period last night. They looked great for two periods. And then, well, in the third period, Tampa just ratcheted up their defense another notch.
Boy, it's funny. It's almost as if we saw this in game 6 and 7 of the Toronto series. I mean, the only difference was when game 6 went to overtime in Tampa Bay, Toronto, Toronto was skating circles around Tampa Bay, and Vasilevsky saved the season. But, you know, otherwise, third period of game 6, Tampa Bay down a goal, dominated. We saw what they did in game 7 because they just did it to the Panthers in game 1. And now the Lightning have won 3 in a row, and those guys are looking at one another like, we're doing this again, aren't we? We are doing this again. Can you believe it?
And that move by Kucherov on the goal was just, you know, someone described it in our Twitch chat room as an NBA crossover move. And that's not a bad description.
That's accurate.
You don't see that very often on ice. And boy, those are some hands and about as easy of a goal as you're going to see after the cross ice pass. And Corey Perry there just shuffled one into an open net.
That was like an ankle breaker to an alley-oop.
And Cena, who we had on the show yesterday from the Tampa Bay Times, he said something that I thought was bearing out during the game, in which he said, listen, the Lightning know they're going to be without Point for most, if not all, the series. So Cooper's got two choices. He can either roll four lines, play more forwards more of the time early, because he knows he's going to have to get production from them to win. The other way he could go is that he could shorten it more and count on two or three guys more. I thought he rolled last night. He only skated 11 forwards, but I thought he was rolling them in game 1, Mark, that he was basically saying, hey, you guys better get used to playing 15 minutes a night on the fourth line, because we need you this series.
14 times the Lightning have won game 1 of the series. They have won 12 of those 14 series when doing so. They won game 1 last night. And Kucherov played like he was 10 years younger, skating back and back-checking and working his tail off without Braden Point out there.
Which is so funny, because of most of game 7 in Toronto, he was in the witness protection program. It's funny how those great players can turn it on, huh? Miller and Moulton. Hey, thanks so much for listening here on the Florida Sports Network.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
Minutes past the hour, Miller and Moulton, the Florida Sports Network. FloridaSportsNetwork.com. Thanks so much for being with us. Greg Wyshynski covers hockey for ESPN, known as the Puck Daddy back in the day. He'll join us coming up in less than 20 minutes. Pat Kerwin at the top of the hour. Seth Everett in a little more than an hour. So a good rest of the show lined up for you. For those of you in Tampa, St. Pete, Port Charlotte, and Venice, and Lake City and surrounding areas.
Golf tournament coming June 11th. The Miller and Moulton Golf Tournament, West Bay. You can sign up right now, FloridaSportsNetwork.com. All the information is there. Scramble, June 11th, West Bay. Hope to see you out there for the Miller and Moulton Golf Tournament.
Do we have a poll question?
We do have a poll question. Very simple one. I really worked hard on this one, David. I hope that you will approve. What series are you more interested in? Heat versus Celtics, Panthers versus Lightning?
Okay. I'm in. We know Felipe's answer. It's Heat Celtics. I think you and I are more interested in Panthers Lightning.
Yes, but it's close.
Yes.
It's very close, because I think this Eastern Conference Finals is going to be fantastic between the Heat and the Celtics, and I think they showed last night why. We actually had, you know, a couple, like most NBA games, David, we got two quality games within one game last night. And the Heat come out on top with Jimmy Butler's 41 points. Leading the way as the Heat exploded in the third quarter with a 22-2 run to start the third and never looked back from that point to get game one in the Eastern Conference Finals.
We talk a little golf?
Sure.
Not just because I'm in, you know, St. Louis working on the Buckcast for the PGA and all that. So Scheffler played last week for the first time since the Masters. First off, I'm a little surprised that he took that much time off. And he wasn't sharp early. And I wasn't crazy about the track that they played the Byron Nelson on, but he kind of got it going over the weekend. Maybe that and a couple practice rounds at Southern Hills is enough. But I believe he's around, what, 10, 11 to 1? Scheffler, the Masters champion. Yes. And what has he moved back down to number two in the world? Did Rahm overtake him as number one?
I believe Rahm overtook him as number one. They're both listed 11 to 1 as the co-favorites for the event. Rory is at 14 to 1. And I'm trying to think who I don't have in front of me, but there was two at 14 to 1 as well.
Is it too obvious for me to throw a few shekels on Victor Hovland?
I don't think so.
Played his college golf at Oklahoma State, which is an hour or so away from Tulsa. He lives in Oklahoma. I mean, he stayed in the greater Stillwater area after college, which wasn't that long ago, by the way. But he's sixth in the world. He fits, Mark, the resume that we all used to pick when the PGA was in August, of the young up-and-comer yet to win their first major. They break through in the last major of the year before we take a hiatus for 8 months. Victor Hovland, just like Justin Thomas did it 5 years ago. Hovland's like 22 to 1.
And I said it earlier just out of the threesome that we talked about. If I were to throw a couple of bucks on a player right now, there's a good chance I'd do it on Jordan Spieth. He's been playing a lot better than he gets credit for. The only thing that worries me is his putting inside of 10 feet. His putting outside of 10 feet is terrific. Spieth misses. Spieth has a little bit of Mickelson in him, David, that he misses a couple of shorties that you can't really explain why it happens for a guy who's such a good putter.
Cost him the Nelson last week. Missed a three-footer on the back nine. And I mean missed the hole. 3 feet. Well, listen, it's been a long time, Mark, since I've seen a player play as well as he's playing, looking like tin cup on the driving range. I mean, every practice swing he takes, he looks like he's doesn't know his swing. You know, we had Azinger on the show 5 weeks ago, in which it's like, you know, he's making swings, he's not hitting shots. He's putting sometimes, looking at the hole, sometimes he's not. I mean, this is mid-round. And yet he's got, what, a win in 2 seconds this year? I mean, I will say it's just a presser, but Tiger does look like a totally different guy now than he did 5 weeks ago. Like, you could see it in his face. You know how when someone's in pain versus when someone's not in as much pain, their eyes are just brighter? Tiger's staring everybody now going, yeah, guys, I feel a lot better than I did 5 weeks ago, and I've been hitting the ball great.
Well, if that's the case, then you probably should put a few shekels on him, because when are you going to get Tiger Woods at 50 to 1?
And the last time we played this tournament here, I won it. I like this course. I remember this course. And the changes they made to the course, yeah, whatever. What, they're going to shave the greens down? Yeah, I've won 5 green jackets. I'm okay with chipping and putting around greens that look like this.
Cam Smith's another 20 to 1 guy that I like, David.
Who?
Cam Smith at 20 to 1. I mean, you can go out and bet 4 or 5 golfers that are 20 to 1 or more and still make pretty good money on this thing.
I mean, Zalatoris is around 30 to 1. Matsuyama's close to 30 to 1. Yeah. There's some good golfers here, in which you're getting good odds. There's not a lot of 6-8 to 1 on the board here. In fact, there's none of it. We already mentioned Rahm.
You know, you mentioned Hovland. If you were going to take a flyer, would you throw a little money on a Matthew Wolf, who played at Oklahoma State as well, going at 125 to 1? You know, I'm just looking somewhere, and these are long shots. I'm not predicting wins. I'm just saying where there might be value and where you might be able to find a golfer who's off the beaten path, because the PGA, David, on many occasions has taken someone off the beaten path, and we found them in the winner's circle.
It's tough to make a bet strictly on this, but when I was doing my, you know, doing my research, and I don't know why this surprised me, because he's already won the tournament twice, but Koepka's played in 9 PGAs. He's got 5 top fives. You know, we remember the wins. But Mark, he finished 4th in 2016, 5th in 2015, and he was T2 last year to Phil. He's got 5 top fives since 2015. I mean, if I'm doing my math correctly, that means 5 of the last 7 PGAs, Koepka's finished in the top 5. With and 2 wins, a 2nd, a 4th, and a 5th.
And you're able to grab him at 35-1.
I mean,
think about that. Koepka with those numbers, Tiger at 50-1. You could just go throw 20 each on both of those and sit back and watch.
I mean, between the two of them, they've won it 6 times. So, I'll say this about both of them. If they start to sniff it, they'll win it. They're both closers.
Tomorrow morning, they get going. Tiger with an early tee time. I think 9:11 tee time tomorrow, something like that, if memory serves me right. He and Rory and Jordan Spieth are the threesome, so they'll get the Friday afternoon treatment on ESPN that you'll see a lot of them. By a lot, I mean every shot that they take.
Yeah, the late afternoon threesome that you'll see a lot of tomorrow is Rahm, Morikawa, and Scheffler. I think it's the top 3 players in the world by ranking.
So that'll play, as they say. We will switch gears from golf with a reminder that our tournament's on June 11th. You can sign up at floridasportsnetwork.com to pucks.
Smooth. That was good right there.
Thank you. Every once in a while, I get lucky.
That's a pro move.
We go to Greg Wyshynski next. He used to be the puck daddy. That name alone had Moulton and Miller on his side. What else can we say? He's next on the Florida Sports Network.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
Well, we are fired up at 22 minutes before the hour. Thanks so much for being with us, Miller and Moulton, the Florida Sports Network. Big fan of his work. When we went to mornings, he went from the East Coast to the West Coast. We've missed each other for years. He probably hasn't missed us nearly as much as we've missed him. Greg Wyshynski, senior hockey writer for ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter at Wyshynski, Wyshynski. Greg, it's David and Mark. How the hell have you been?
I've been good, man. I built a shrine to you guys in my office that I just kind of look at, and I would weep. I would weep at the shrine when I was living in California. But now I'm back in Brooklyn, and all is good.
Well, all is not good, at least in Game 1 with the Florida Panthers. It looks like something we'd seen before. I mean, it kind of reminded me of Game 6 and 7 with Tampa and Toronto, with Braden Point out. The Lightning did not have the same skill offensively. They didn't have the same speed. But yet, in the third period, they amped up their defense to a level, Greg, that really allowed Florida one shot and out the whole period, and the Panthers looked lost in that third period.
They truly did. And I think, you know, unfortunately for the Panthers, the game was once again decided by special teams. And so Andrew Brunette last night said, hey, I thought that we did some good things at 5-on-5. He kind of got ridiculed for it. But honestly, he's not wrong. Like, I thought 5-on-5 that the Panthers developed at least some offensive attack. They had some chances. You know, they obviously scored their goal at 5-on-5. But, you know, you go into this Lightning game, And you know one thing, which is you got to be disciplined. You got to be disciplined against the Lightning. They take six penalties, and they give them six power plays, and they score three goals on those power plays without Braden Point in the game, which is insane because he's like a very, very important piece of their power play. He's the guy who carries the puck in. He plays the bumper position on the power play, makes things happen. So this power play should be diminished, and then they still give up three goals. And then, obviously, the Panthers' power play woes have now become systemic. I think it's now 21 straight power plays in these playoffs where they did not score a goal. And to really kind of just, like, underscore why that's important, you get a 1-0 lead in this game. If it's 2-0, now you got some wind in your under your wings, right? Like, now you're really, really playing with some confidence against these guys in game one on home ice. But the inability to get that goal to really extend a lead, I think, has absolutely just flummoxed this team and made them all very frustrated.
Greg, how much, if at all, do you think the Lightning are in not just Florida's head, maybe even the rest of the league? I mean, it's been said 3 or 4 times during the Lightning 8 playoff games by the network announcers that the entire league is desperately rooting first for Toronto and now Florida, which to me means that the Lightning are in 15 teams' heads.
Well, I mean, you could say that. It's pretty easy to do that once you've won back-to-back cups. And you know, the bottom line about the Lightning is that all of the pieces that won those cups and all the pieces that even, you know, challenged for those cups in years beforehand, don't forget, like, before they won the Stanley Cups, they were losing in the conference final, like, seemingly every season. They're all there. And so, you know, when the basis of your team is Andrei Vasilevsky and Victor Hedman and Steven Stamkos and Nikita Kucherov and Braden Point when he's healthy, I mean, all of those names that we've come to know, it's not like the Lightning in name only. I mean, and the scariest part about it is that the one flaw for this team coming into the playoffs, which was they didn't have that Yanni Gourde, Blake Coleman, Barclay Goodrow checking line anymore, seemingly has been solved by some of their deadline acquisitions and Brandon Hagel and Nick Paul, but also the emergence of Corey Perry and guys like Ross Colton. So, you know, the only vulnerability this team seemed to have, it was twofold. One, they were going to be tired, which they clearly are not. And then two, it was going to be the changes to their lineup that happened. But apparently, you know, they've filled them in quite ably.
Greg, you've covered this game for a long time. David and I've covered it for a long time. We've all been a part of this game. Look, that's not goaltender interference 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 2 years ago. But, Greg, last night, the way they call the game, how does that not get called?
So there's an argument to be made that the rules allow that because of where, I believe it was Cirelli, right, where
yeah.
He was standing on the play. I think there was so much attention paid to him making contact with Bobrovsky's head and seeing his head sort of jerk to the right on that play that there wasn't really a lot of attention paid to Bobrovsky's stick, which got caught up in Cirelli's skate. And if you're saying the rule is that as long as Cirelli is outside of the blue paint, then it's not goalie interference. Well, at the very end of that play, when Bobrovsky's head is turned and his stick is now turned too because it's caught in Cirelli's skate, Cirelli skates inside the blue paint. So if you really wanted to get nuanced about this thing, then I think that you could say it's goalie interference. But more to the point, though, the spirit of the rule is, was the goalie unable to position to move, you know, it within his crease to make a save? And that's usually interpreted by his whole body. Last time I checked, the head is part of the body. And, like, if you can't move your head to see the puck, to stop it, I think it could be goalie interference. I don't know. It's one of those deals where maybe the rule is flawed, maybe it was applied correctly, but I know in the spirit of the thing, getting your head knocked and your stick knocked out of the way by a dude standing in front of you is probably not within the spirit of what goalie interference should be.
But, Greg, you know why it's not just going to be people who care about the Tampa Bay-Florida series. You know, we have seen in the first 2 weeks of the playoffs, I think we all got an idea of what was and what was not goalie interference, how they were going to call it. So now we get to the very first game of the second round, and we call it differently than we called it through the whole first round of the playoffs. I would think that's going to be disconcerting for teams going forward, but also now there may be even more, you know, I don't want to say liberties, but maybe we can just, I don't know, get away with a little bit more in late May than we were getting away with in early May.
It's possible. I mean, I think the officiating in these playoffs has been okay, but in the first couple of games of the second round, I don't think it was very okay. I mean, you had a penalty called on Ryan McDonough last night, which was one of the worst calls of the postseason, where they claimed that he hit a Panthers player before the puck arrived when they were like having a jump ball, and he hit him when the puck was in the dude's glove. And you know, the Colorado St. Louis game, they didn't start calling penalties until like last 5 minutes of the game, which is kind of bizarre. So yeah, I mean, it could lead to some stuff. It could not. You just hope to have some modicum of competent officiating, because in the first round, I think we had it, and I'm hoping in the second round it continues.
Does Burnett have to do anything to keep this job? Did he get the job by winning the first round, or does he have to beat Tampa to get this from the interim tag off?
It's a great question. There's a part of me that thinks that he's got the job if he wants it because of the regular season, and because they got through the first round. And getting through that first round wasn't easy. I mean, they kind of found ways through a tough defensive front by the Capitals and made it happen. My hesitation is that what we're going to have to see from him now is twofold. One, we're going to have to see some real tactical changes to generate more offense against this Lightning team, because you just cannot have the performance that you had in game one and even hope to compete against this team. And then two, I mean, I think we're all kind of waiting to see what happens when real adversity hits and if you can light them up a little bit. You know, I think Rick Tocchet on TNT last night had it right, which is that you got to shoot your shot now. You know, you got to get in the face of a Jonathan Huberdeau, of an Alexander Barkov, of some of the talented guys in this team, who, when you look around the league and see what star players are doing to drag their teams to victory, be it, you know, Nathan MacKinnon or Connor McDavid or whomever, like, these guys just haven't done it yet this entire, like, postseason. You know, it's been Carter Verhaeghe leading the way. And then when you're 0 for 22 or 0 for 21 on the power play or whatever it's been, you know, those are the guys that have to make it work, right? So I think it's interesting to see how he'll handle this insofar as, like, trying to motivate his best players, because I don't think they've been their best players in the series.
Well, the three games that Barkov has not appeared on the score sheet are the three games that the Panthers have lost in the playoffs. I don't think that's a coincidence. Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, you can follow him on Twitter at Wyshynski, Wyshynski. All right, going forward, is it just a bad matchup for the Rangers? Because Carolina just, they seem to own them. Their style of play, the Rangers who like to think they're fast, and yet the Rangers acknowledge, yeah, we're not fast enough for Carolina. I just don't think this is a good matchup. I think the Rangers are very lucky to get here. And I don't know. I think this could be a short series.
Yeah, I picked the Hurricanes in five. I will say that the Rangers showed a lot of heart, I thought, if you want to use that word, in game six and seven. Yeah, they had the benefit of not having Sidney Crosby on the ice in game six. That obviously affected everything for the Pittsburgh Penguins. But I thought the Rangers really did a good job in rallying and winning that series. But on paper, there are so many just distinct disadvantages for them against the Carolina Hurricanes. The Rangers are not a good 5-on-5 team. The Penguins absolutely exposed them in the first round. The Hurricanes are a very, very good 5-on-5 team, as the Boston Bruins saw. The Rangers live and die with their power play. Carolina had the best penalty kill in the regular season. Carolina's got home ice in the series. They were the best offensive team on home ice in the regular season, and everyone saw what they did against a really good Boston Bruins team in Raleigh in those four games. So it really, really kind of points to Carolina winning this thing in the walk. But the one caveat I'd give you is that Igor Shesterkin, who's going to win the Vezina Trophy as the best goalie in the league this year, was not very good for a really good stretch of that Penguins series. And then he played, I thought, really, really well in Game 7. So if you're looking for a sign of life for the Rangers, it might be that their best player this season, their goalie, might be rounding into form at the right time.
Greg, we're all into the Battle of the Sunshine State down here, but the Battle of Alberta starts tonight. Sell this series for what, for people who are going to tune in to something they've not seen before. Just how electric is this going to be?
Yeah, I'll give you the example, just to put it in local terms. It's Alabama Auburn. It's the Iron Bowl. Like it is one team in the Oilers that has this incredible championship pedigree that stretches on for decades. They still kind of live off that reputation. And then you have this Calgary team that gets a few huge wins against them and seems to own them actually kind of in the regular season at times. So it's an incredible rivalry. It is one of those deals in the NHL that you rarely get, which is, you know, it's not just simply like two division rivals playing. It's also local bragging rights. Like the players on both teams were mentioning how much it means to the province of Alberta that this series was happening. So if you can think of that level of turf war, whether it's Philly and the Penguins, whether it's the Lightning and the Panthers, it's that locality and that pressure to win one for your city that's inherent too. It's bloody, it's wonderful, and these teams generally don't like each other. To me, it's probably the best rivalry in the league right now, with the caveat being that I still don't know if Florida and the Lightning are on the same footing. I still feel like it's one team chasing the other right now, and that stinks, because I think if the Panthers got one over on the Lightning, it would certainly elevate that rivalry to maybe the top of the league, but it still feels very lopsided right now.
Yeah, plus they haven't met enough in the playoffs. This is only the second straight year they've done it, but it could be in a few years, that is for sure. Greg, thanks for making time for us. Welcome back to the Eastern time zone. Safe travels, and hopefully we can do this again.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Greg Wyshynski, ESPN. Follow him on Twitter, Wyshynski, Wyshynski.
The Battle of Alberta. This will be a raucous affair, and just for the outside shots of the opposing stadiums will be something to witness. This is going to be a great series. Fired up to watch Calgary and Edmonton. I think Calgary is going to move through this without a whole lot of problem, but it still will deliver.
One of the problems for Edmonton is they don't call penalties against McDavid. He's unstoppable, and teams are doing everything. It's just kind of like
a hack-a-shack.
Yeah, it's kind of like NBA early Jordan, when you could get really physical with him. I mean, it's been documented. Connor McDavid, who no one in the league can skate with, and may then be on top of it the most skilled player in the league, so you would think he'd be an unstoppable force, yet teams are allowed to do anything they want to stop him, and penalties aren't called. I think that's the series, Mark. They got to call penalties. If they don't, Calgary's going to win.
Auburn, Alabama. I like that description. To try to put it in perspective for people who may not get it, I thought he did a really good job, really quickly and succinctly, to say Auburn versus Alabama. Out of play.
Edmonton is Bama. Calgary is Auburn. Miller and Moulton. Pat Kerwin next on the Florida Sports Network.